Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Hunger in America has reached epidemic proportions. One in six of us don't have enough to eat. It's hard to imagine that a country with as much wealth as ours has a huge population of people who are hungry. 50 million Americans go hungry every day. A film just about to show here in St. Louis will document the problem and offers some solutions which should be attainable in this land of plenty. It's titled A Place at the Table, and it will open at the Tivoli on March 1st. It's a riveting illustration of the problem that begs the question, how can this be happening here? Joining me to talk about it are Sonny Schaefer, Executive Director at Operation Food Search. Glenn Keenan is Chair of the Hunger Task Force with the Missouri Association of Social Welfare, which works to improve the health and welfare of Missourians. He has been involved in food pantry work for three decades. Lisa Vitale is the Backpack Coordinator for Moline Elementary School. Thanks, folks, for being with us. Nice to have you.
My pleasure.
I'd like to begin with just a couple of quick facts for you and our audience. I'm sure you're aware of these. The U.S. is last among advanced countries in terms of food security. One of every two U.S. kids at some point will be on food assistance. Food insecurity costs this country $167 billion a year. And in 1970, there were 200 food banks in the United States. Today, there are 40,000. That really tells the story. Glenn, let me begin with you. How are these facts relevant to our community?
First of all, right here in the city of St. Louis, we have 110,000 people getting food stamps. In the state of Missouri, we have over 940,000 people getting food stamps. So about one person in three in the city here and one person in six in our state gets food stamps. That means that a whole lot of people we see every day can't get by, can't get through life without help from the government to buy the food they need.
Mm-hmm. Sonny, let me take it to you. What are you seeing in terms of this growth that we're talking about?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we're looking at between 30% and 40% more people going to food pantries than in 2008 when the economy began to decline. So Operation Food Search right now is helping to feed 150,000 people each month. And regrettably, one-third of those people are children. And it's kind of a staggering thing in that movie. They were talking about, you know, one out of two children during their lifetime is going to require emergency food assistance. And Jeff Bridges has been a spokesperson for this cause for many years. And one of the things that he said is that if a foreign country were doing this to our kids, we'd be at war with them. But yet, you know, this is a problem that, you know, we're just allowing to exist and to get worse.
That's a very powerful film, by the way. I had a chance to see it. I think they did a great job in telling the story and really putting it in a perspective that many people probably don't have.
Yeah, I agree. And it just, you know, personalized the problem. I think a lot of times people think that the hungry are homeless. And, you know, the homeless are really just the tip of the iceberg. But this movie did a very good job of taking three families, showing how they struggled to feed their family and themselves.
Hunger here is different than it is in third world countries.
Oh, definitely, sure. Much so. It's, you know, people aren't malnourished to the point that they're, you know, dealing with rickets and those problems. And I guess the surprising thing and the thing that, you know, most of us realize now is that hunger and obesity are really twins. And, you know, where you see hunger, you're going to see obesity. And you're talking about the United States was last on the list in food security. Unfortunately, we're first on the list in obesity.
Well, we'll talk more about that because there are a lot of people who will see someone who is overweight and then watch them use food stamps and say, hey, what's going on here? But there's certainly be some discussion about that. Lisa, let me turn to you. We've talked about the number of children, and that's what you're dealing with on an everyday basis. Tell us what you're seeing, and we probably ought to explain what Operation Backpack is.
Well, Operation Backpack is a program from Operation Food Search, and schools have to apply for this, and I'm not sure how they get chosen, but we were chosen 3 years ago. And when we were chosen, it was a wonderful opportunity for our families, if they qualified and signed up, to get a food bag every week on Friday to take home. And it didn't matter if it was one child per family, because if a family had five children, all five children qualified for the backpack. So they could bring home five food bags on a Friday, which helps supplement their meals on the weekend. Each of the food bags has a breakfast type of food for Saturday and Sunday. It has some type of vegetable. It has some type of fruit. And then it has some type of meal. It might be macaroni and cheese. It might be meatballs and SpaghettiOs. But it's some type of protein also so that the kids are getting food over the weekend.
Well, Glenn, let me turn to you because this is something that I think the film brought out. And as valuable a resource as food banks, food pantries are, that oftentimes the food that is being distributed is not the best food, most nutritious food for the people who are receiving it.
One of the great ironies in America is that calories are cheap but nutrition is expensive. And food pantries have to depend primarily on the food that's donated to them. So first of all, we're starting with canned goods, which unfortunately means a lot of salt. A lot of times we're dealing with processed foods, which we know could be healthier. But the sad part is we have to give people something. The first job of a food pantry is to keep people from going hungry. The second job is to try to improve nutrition, but that is much, much harder than the first job. One thing, I ran a food pantry for 17 years out in West County. We were able to purchase fresh fruit and vegetables and milk and eggs and meat. But the problem was that cost us over $100,000 a year to feed about 25,000 people. So about $4, basically it worked out, you know, about $4 per person in each food order in fruits and vegetables. But that was a tremendous strain on our organization, and most of the food pantries don't have the resources to have a jobber go down to Produce Row for them or to call a company and have 100,000 pounds or 10,000 pounds of meat delivered the next day.
You would think that and hunger, food insecurity, which, by the way, is a term that I don't like. It sort of sanitizes it. Do you guys
really
feel the same way?
I feel the same way. I call it, it's hunger.
Yes, it is hunger.
It's hunger.
It's like this term sequester that we're hearing
exactly.
All about these days. What the heck does it mean? Hunger is hunger.
Exactly. Everybody knows what hunger means. Hardly anyone knows what food insecurity means.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, one of the places where people are hungry is in the rural areas, probably as much so as in the urban areas. But you'd think, hey, there are farms out there. There's plenty of fresh produce, Sonny. What are they talking about? They can't get nutritious food.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there just aren't those farms that exist as they used to. And many of these farms are producing corn and wheat and those types of products as opposed to vegetables and fruits. So it's very difficult in the rural community to get access to these. Or, you know, in what are referred to now as food deserts, which is essentially an area where low-income people don't have easy access to a supermarket and availability to nutritious foods at a reasonable cost.
You know, I had some numbers here that I was just looking up that really kind of tell a big part of the story. Mega farms are taking over the agriculture industry. Mm-hmm. 70% of taxpayer subsidies, according to my figures here, and this came from the movie, mm-hmm. by the way, A Place at the Table. 70% of the taxpayer subsidies go to these mega farms. And what are the mega farms producing? They're producing corn and things like that are used in processed foods. Processed foods, of course, are less nutritious and also tend to pack in the calories. Mm-hmm. And Glenn, as you've just described, This is a huge part of the problem.
Right. In fact, right now in Missouri, our greatest concentration of people needing food is in rural areas. And ironically, the three highest counties as far as number or portion of the population on food stamps are down the Boot Hill. If you've ever seen the dirt down there almost to the Arkansas border, you'd say, well, you can grow stuff down here so easily. But what they grow are not the foods that people eat. They're the foods for the processors. They're the foods for grain, for animals, and so on. What's happened is in this country, we've gotten away from the idea of growing our own food locally. And only about 4% of the agriculture industry nowadays is devoted to things like fruits and vegetables. Most of it's devoted to row crops, for processed food, for ethanol, and things like that.
Another of the notes I have here is the fact that agribusiness is one of the largest lobbies in Washington, which is one of the reasons why all those subsidies are going their way.
Yeah, no question about it. I thought also was interesting in the movie, it showed a graph where snack items mm-hmm. decreased in price 200% over the last 8 years, while fresh produce and more nutritious food increased by 200%. So it's difficult to feed your family, you know, a healthy, nutritious diet. And one of the things that Operation Food Search has done is complemented our food distribution activities with nutrition education. And we're deeply devoted to that. In fact, we have 7 dietitians and nutritionists on our staff who teach cooking and food budgeting and healthy eating skills to low-income adults and children.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's called Cooking Matters. It's a program that was developed by Share Our Strength, and so we partner with that organization and reach, you know, several thousand people each year with this important nutrition and cooking information.
But Americans love processed foods. Mm-hmm. They do. Clearly they do, because they taste good and, well,
they're cheap.
And they're cheap, and that's why we're so in love with them.
The other thing, too, is that Americans always talk about nutrition. But it's always like everybody says they're going to go to the gym tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We always talk about nutrition, and unfortunately, we know fruits and vegetables are better for us. But when you're watching the Academy Awards and you want a snack, you reach for the chips or the popcorn. You don't go in the kitchen and grab an apple. It's just the way we eat nowadays. And the bad news is for low-income families, that popcorn, those chips are easier to get and cheaper per serving than the apples.
You know, there is a certain stigma that is attached to people who make use of government programs, mm-hmm. some of the resources out there that are available. Lisa, do you run into this? I mean, you've got a school population, I gather, which is probably at or below generally the poverty line. Am I correct in that assumption?
Our free and reduced lunch is at 96%. We have 467 students, and in the morning when I do breakfast duty, every day it's a different type of breakfast, but when it's time for the students to go back to class and we're counting down for them to go back to class, they reach for the apple or the fruit or the grapes that they don't get at home so that they can eat that first, and they'll leave the cereal or they'll leave the breakfast bar, and they'll eat that fruit very quickly because they don't get it at home.
This was pointed out in the movie, by the way, that once they start exposing kids to things like that, apples, slices, mm-hmm. bananas, what have you, that's exactly what they do,
mm-hmm.
right?
They want it.
How has that changed? How long have you been doing this, the backpack operation?
This is my third year at Moline.
And what kind of change have you seen, if any, during that time?
The number of our backpacks have increased. And the first year we started, we were at 300 backpacks. And that was probably a school population of 500 students. But right now we're at 246 backpacks. Food bags. But what I see is that the students are being very polite when they're mm-hmm. getting it. Thank you very much. And sometimes if our delivery isn't made on a certain day, they're very disappointed. They come to me, when are our food bags coming mm-hmm. in? And they really need that food.
Is there any evidence within the school system itself that having the opportunity to have this additional food for the children has improved their performance in school?
I couldn't tell you. I hope it does. I know that they're getting food over the weekend, and that helps. That helps.
Sunny, do you have any sense of that?
Well, when we launched this program, one of the reasons we did it was because we were getting calls from teachers and school administrators saying that kids were coming back to school on Monday weighing less than they mm-hmm. did on Friday, that these kids sometimes have very little and sometimes no food in the house. So we started the program 6 years ago with one school and 100 kids, and has developed now to 4,000 children. And we have a waiting list for this program. Our dietitians oversee it so that it is nutritious as possible, although it is all shelf-stable food because of the numbers involved. But, you know, certainly this is making a difference. There's no, you know, official and evaluation being done. But, you know, it just makes common sense. If a child arrives in school and hasn't had anything to eat over the weekend, they're not going to be concentrating on their studies. They're going to be concentrating on seeing Lisa to get breakfast and then wondering where lunch is going to come from.
Again, pointed out well in the film and very emphatically in the film. Do you have any comment with regard to that, Clint?
Just one thing to point out. There's a myth out there that food stamps take care of all of a family's food budget. Food stamps were never designed to cover more than 2/3 of a family's food cost, and that's only for a family with almost no income. So food stamps are really a supplement to the money the family has to spend on food. They're not designed to give you enough money to buy enough nutritious food to take care of your family, and that's why the vast majority of people in Missouri getting food stamps also have to go to a food pantry.
I want to come back and pick up on that point, but I have to take a break now. You just heard from Glenn Keenan, chair of the Hunger Task Force for the Missouri Association of Social Welfare. Lisa Vitale is with us, backpack coordinator for Moline Elementary School. And Sonny Schaefer, also in studio, executive director at Operation Food Search. We'll come back to continue the conversation, and we'd certainly like to get you in on it. I think many of you probably are surprised by the kind of numbers that we've given early on in this program. Have you ever been food insecure? And if so, how have you dealt with it? Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air, and you can reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation. I think it is formally billed as a discussion of food insecurity, and we've all agreed at the table here that we'd rather call it hunger because that's exactly what it is. My guests in studio, Sonny Schaefer, executive director at Operation Food Search. Glenn Keenan is chair of the Hunger Task Force with the Missouri Association of Social Welfare. Lisa Vitale is the backpack coordinator, that is, for Moline Elementary School. We were talking off the air, and Lisa, I have to come back to you on this because I wanted to ask before, with the number of children that are on food assistance at your school, are many of them overweight?
Yes, definitely.
Do you attribute that to their diet?
I do, and their lack of activity. I teach physical education, and I see my students five times a month, and five times a month doesn't include if there's mm-hmm. a day off. I rarely see my kids, and I know that they're not doing anything outside of school for various reasons, and very few of them play outside sports on sports teams.
Yeah. I want to come back to the statement that I made earlier with regard to obesity and the fact that there are a lot of folks out there who are critical of the people who are on some sort of assistance because so many of them are overweight, as we've discussed, because of the kinds of food mm-hmm. that they are forced to eat. So how do you deal with that part of the stigma? Sonny, I'll take that to you. I mean, how do you convince people that these people aren't freeloaders, as some of them suggest mm-hmm. they are, mm-hmm. but rather they're victims of their own circumstance?
Well, exactly, because it's much cheaper to fill up on high carbohydrate, high fat foods than it is fruit, vegetables, and protein items. And again, that's why we think nutrition education is so important. We've also launched a new program called Cooking Matters in the Store and are going to be conducting shopping tours in Shop and Save stores this year, teaching people how to buy most economically and most healthfully. Because while we do have a choice, and people have to rethink these choices and, you know, just make better ones, more nutritional ones. Yesterday, I was hungry, and I was caught by one of our dietitians with cookies in my hand. And I was quite embarrassed because she was munching on some carrots. And really, that pound of carrots that she was enjoying was less expensive than the package of cookies that I was eating.
But Glenn, let's be real about this. If you offer a kid a carrot in one hand and a cookie in the other, the cookie's going to get
the cookie's going to be taken. But at our Definitely. Food pantry, we used to have kids. We gave them a choice between candy or fruit, and they'd almost always take fruit because fruit was rare for them. Mm-hmm. The other thing is we have to remember the vast majority of families on food stamps in Missouri have employed adults in the home. So we're talking about people who are just like us, juggling work, juggling home, taking care of the kids, but they're doing it with a lot less money than the average family. And so they don't have the money to go to the gym. It's harder for them to afford the big bag of apples or the bunch of bananas. And a lot of this obesity, again, is because processed foods are so cheap, and they do taste good.
You know, one of the most powerful elements of the movie, A Place at the Table, was concerned a woman who had two children. As I recall, it's been a week or mm-hmm. 10 days ago since I've seen the film. Both of them were special needs kids. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she ultimately got a job. She looked for a long time to find a job, ultimately found one, and she had been on food stamps prior to that. As soon as she found the job, which didn't pay very much, she was no longer eligible for the food stamps. Is this a big problem?
We see it all the time. The system does not reward partial success. Once you get to a certain level, your benefits go away. It could be food stamps. It could be the WIC program. It could be child care assistance, which we don't have enough of in Missouri. But we really penalize people for trying to help themselves and not going from being dependent to being totally self-sufficient in one jump. Because all of a sudden, we see in Missouri, too, a lot of families this time of year are seeing their food stamps cut because they worked by the hour in, say, retail, and they had good earnings in November and December. They send in the report to the state in January, and then they make the adjustment on their February food stamps and February and March food stamps. So a family that may have gotten $400 of food stamps in January now find themselves trying to get by on $200 on food stamps.
You mentioned the WIC program. For those who don't know, what is that?
That's the Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, which is one of our great success stories we almost never hear about. They have nutrition counselors and others who work with women and with young children. They make sure the kids are getting their shots and their doctor's visits, but they also give nutrition counseling to the women, and they also give them vouchers for specific foods, like so much cheese, so much milk, and so on. And that's been proven to make a great difference in the health of the kids, to where we're saving like $3 as a society in medical cost for every dollar we're spending on WIC. The bad news is it's hard to replicate that because the administrative costs for having all those nutritionalists and all those one-on-one sessions are high.
Before I go to the phones, we have a number of calls. Sonny, I want to put a question to you with regard to the types of people that you're seeing. There is, I think, an impression that we're talking about the poorest of the poor. We've already indicated that's not necessarily the case. What have you seen in these difficult economic times in terms of clientele?
Well, just more working poor people, people who are working at minimum wage jobs. Sometimes they have part-time jobs, two, three of them. You know, they're really trying very hard. They're, you know, doing the best that they can, and, you know, being penalized in their efforts is really unfortunate. And I think that's one of the things I just urge people. It's easy to be judgmental, but I'd urge people to go and see this movie, A Place at the Table, because it gives a great exposure to life situations that people are dealing in, many of whom we just don't have contact with on a daily basis. The other thing that we see at Operation Food Search is people who were formerly supporters of our organization now needing to go to food pantries for assistance.
Yeah, we've seen that before in times that are somewhat like these. A Place at the Table, by the way, just mentioned by Sonny, it will be shown from March 1st through 7th at various times at the Tivoli Theater. We have information on our website at stlouispublicradio.org. Also have a telephone number here. I'll give it, try to give it later as well, 314-727-7271.
And we encourage people to bring canned goods to the movie.
Okay, well, I wonder why. Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll begin with Kristen calling from Imperial. Kristen, thanks for being with us. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I had a couple of quick comments, one of which, I am starting a program at my daughter's school, or it's in the works, and there's about 50 families that are going to take part of it. But basically, we've kind of cordoned off a little plot of land, and then the families will come and plant fresh fruits and vegetables, and then they kind of take turns, like weeding and watering and stuff. But then they get to keep all of the, you know, or a portion, their portion of the fruits and vegetables that are grown. Because what I've noticed is that a lot of the lower-income children in my daughter's school seem to have a disconnect between what they're eating and where it comes from. And I think that this is partially a generational issue, because if you have multiple generations of families who are very low-income, don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables and stuff like that, it's not even something that's thought about. You know, they're going to buy what's cheaper and more filling instead of a fruit or vegetable, because the thought just never occurs to them, well, this bag of chips costs exactly the same as 2 pounds of grapes, and that's not even a thought. So I think creating more awareness of where the food is coming from will help make those, you know, decisions when they're trying to figure out where to allocate their food dollars. My second comment is, I was, as a young woman, I had a daughter when I was 19, so we relied heavily on food stamps, WIC, and other forms of governmental assistance, and it is just, it's not enough. I basically got a job at a place where I was able to eat meals there so that I could provide fruits and vegetables for my child, but I would have to make the dinner just for her, because the money that we got was not enough to feed both of us. And because those things are important to me, you know, I was willing to sacrifice my own meals to give her what she needed, but I realize not everybody is in that situation. So it's very tough. It's very tough.
Kristen, thank you so much for the call. Anyone care to comment on this? Glenn?
We really love community gardens. There are all sorts of school groups, church groups. groups of senior citizens who do gardens and either give it to the people in the community or bring it to a food pantry. And that is so important because pantries cannot get enough fresh produce. Mm-hmm. Our challenge, of course, is that fresh produce, being fresh, is hard to handle. You have to move it quickly or have good refrigeration and so on. But we really encourage any group that would like to have a community garden, they can get a hold of Operation Food Search. We have resources. We can help them with that. And it's a great boon for everyone.
We support community gardens as well. They're, you know, a great way to introduce people to produce, the importance of growing, the importance of eating nutritiously. And again, our dietitians go to many of these gardens and teach the people involved there on, you know, how to prepare these different fruits and vegetables, because oftentimes this is the first introduction to a particular type of food.
All right. I'm taking a look at our emails here. The urban garden, you talk about community gardens, you're talking about urban gardens, yeah. Are you seeing an impact, Sonny, that they've had? I mean, there are a few of them, I guess. How quickly are they growing in number?
Well, they seem to be growing in number. I think there's, you know, over 100 in the city of St. Louis alone, and they are certainly making a difference. And just as Lisa was saying, you know, the children, when given an option, prefer to take the fruit over something that's processed. And I think when people are exposed to the garden, that's the case as well.
Any thoughts to add to that, or shall we go back to an email here that I have from Joyce in Festus? And I'll be interested in your comments in response to her. I have a close friend who goes to a food pantry once a month, and the amount of food they give her is obscene. She shares with me, which is nice, but last month she got 2 10-pound bags of sausage patties. Do food pantries have any guidelines to follow? Is anyone overseeing them so that the food is distributed in the most appropriate and efficient way possible? Glenn, you've been working in this for a long time. Go ahead.
Well, food pantries give out what they get, and obviously somebody was very nice to them and gave them a lot of sausage patties. Which means you have to move it out. Unfortunately, what we hear much more often is this all I'm getting, rather than we're getting too much. My guess would be, too, that a lot of what they're getting, unfortunately, is probably like bakery items. We have more than enough bakery items a lot of times, but not enough canned goods, not enough high nutritious foods, things like cereal, things like peanut butter. That's a problem with pantries. You're not going out there and shopping like you would at a grocery store. You're getting what's been donated to them. And in fact, I feel good for that pantry. They had meat. You know, a lot of times our pantries don't have any fresh meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think as a food bank, you accept and you take what is offered to you. And oftentimes the food industry overproduces bakery items, sweets, food items that aren't particularly nutritious. It's less expensive to overproduce than to miss sales. Mm-hmm. And we always take what's offered to us with the hope that the next item that might be coming to us would be something more nutritious. Mm-hmm. We were able to start a meat donation program with Schnucks recently, and the program's been up and running actually for 2 years. And so for the first time, we've been able to supply a steady supply of meat to the agencies we serve. And we do have someone who oversees the processes of the food pantries. But again, as Glenn said, it kind of depends on the availability of and what we have.
Sure. Back to the phones. Let's bring in Tom calling from South St. Louis. Tom, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
I'm Tom Burnham. I work for Peter and Paul Community Services. And one of the programs I oversee is a meals program. In the year 2012, we saw a greater than 10% increase in the numbers of folks coming in to have dinner. And we don't do an intake or anything like that. I can tell you though, the visible increase is in the number of families with small children coming in. Most of the folks we see are working poor, and that includes some who are homeless. Most years we see about a 1.5 to 2% increase, but we served about 29,600 some odd meals in 2011 and about 33,500 meals in 2012. And again, the increase seemed to be in the numbers of families with small children. We set aside more tables for them to sit at than we ever did before.
Thanks for the call.
We're seeing that across the board. Food pantries, soup kitchens, other groups seeing tremendous increases, and it all goes back to the economy. In America, hunger is an economic problem, not a food problem. There's more than enough food. People can't afford it. One thing we've noticed is the median income for the typical family in Missouri has dropped about $100 a week since 2008. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of families who used to be just making it who aren't making it anymore.
One of the lines from the movie, as I recall it, was that we have plenty of food. That's not the problem. The problem is poverty
and
lack of resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hunger is really a symptom of poverty.
Yeah. Lisa, you've been dealing with the backpack program for 3 years now. Were you surprised coming into this at the need?
Yes, very surprised. But then at the same time, I was also very aware that it was necessary. And I wish I could have every student get a food bag. But it was a simple process as of turning in a permission slip. And some parents chose not to do that. And some have opted out after they get the food bag a couple of times. They've like, well, we don't want that. We don't want that. So
some feel ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You run into that, both of you. Yeah.
It's actually probably easier in this country to admit you're a heroin addict than you have to go to a food pantry. Mm. We've seen that for years at my pantry down in Valley Park. There are people who are so afraid of running into their neighbors or people from their church and so on that they'll go hungry rather than have to admit that they can't take care of themselves, because people tend to say, well, you're poor because you want to be poor because you're lazy. Mm-hmm. And we can show you all sorts of people who used to have good jobs. We can show you people who, because of health problems, can't be in the workforce anymore. We can show you situations where moms have to stay home because they have a special needs child or two. And because of that, it's hard for them to go out and earn a living. All these things impact it. But the public perception is, if you're getting food from a pantry, it's because you're lazy and the pantry makes it too easy for you to get help.
Yeah. We'll deal, again, when we come back, after taking another break. We have a caller waiting that wants to deal with what I would call the shame factor in all of this. We'll take that call when we return. We're guests in studio are Sonny Schaefer of Operation Food Search, Glenn Keenan with the Missouri Association of Social Welfare, and Lisa Vitale, the backpack coordinator at Moline Elementary School. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation about hunger in America and hunger in our community. I want to go to Phyllis in Creve Coeur right away. I think she can pick up on what we've just been talking about. Phyllis, go ahead.
Yes, I will pick up on it. First, I want to say two other brief things. I keep having the feeling that the people who came up with this appalling term, food insecurity, were college graduates sitting around in a room who've never been hungry in their lives. There is no way that expression goes with the word hunger, and we need to get back to the word hunger so we get the full meaning. Second, I want to say that you were talking about community gardens. At our synagogue, we have a day camp behind the synagogue, and we have a garden there that the children operate in the summer. First of all, we grow things like herbs in that garden, no fruits, just vegetables. The herbs are so that children can learn as a part of this process. And all the vegetables go to the food pantry. It's a wonderful cause. And the most important thing is that every item that we needed for that garden, from the topsoil to the plants, has been donated by generous members of our business community. And I think that's very important. The third thing is, in the synagogue, some people come to the rabbi and they need food. And especially during Passover, we can get this food donated. That's not a problem. But we are wrestling with how to get the food to the people so that they can keep their dignity, just as you were talking about. We don't want them walking out of the synagogue carrying a bag of food. It doesn't seem right to them. It doesn't seem right to us. Have you come up with any solutions on how organizations like ours, our synagogue, can get around this problem?
Well, the school does it through the backpack because folks can't see the food in the backpack, right? Mm-hmm. All right. What about the other ideas, Sonny?
Well, when we started the backpack program, we were very concerned about this issue, and we deal only with elementary schools for that reason, less stigma with the younger children. But what we found is that the kids are really proud and happy to be getting these backpacks, so it's not an issue. The pantry level, however, you know, I understand there is a shame and stigma attached to it. I do know that, you know, some pantries put the food in special bags so it doesn't look like it's come from a pantry. Some of them even deliver it to some homes where they know the families are just too proud to go to the pantry.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's a problem. One big thing we find is that people will sometimes be willing to drive 20 miles to go to a food pantry outside their neighborhood than to go to one two blocks away, especially if it's a church or someplace visible, because it's more anonymous if they're going someplace far away or like the Jewish food pantry or Circle of Concern or Feed My People. It's off the beaten track enough that they feel more comfortable going there where they're anonymous than staying somewhere in their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, what about vending machines in schools? Are they a dying breed, if you will? I mean, there's been a lot of controversy over what has heretofore been available in schools.
Well, being an elementary school, we don't have vending machines available to the students. But also helping our food service person with our health and wellness program, we had to limit the availability of the snacks and the sugary drinks in the vending machines for the middle schools and the high schools. And just walking through my daughter's high school the other day, I was like, wow, why is your vending machine out here in the hall? And she goes, well, it's turned off during the day, Mom. You can't use it until before school and after school. And I was like, well, that's great, because there were some sodas in there. And I thought, wait a minute. So I think vending machines are a dying breed, even though we still have one in our teacher's lounge.
We won't tell anybody.
Oh, that's okay, though.
Is this the work, Sonny, of Michelle Obama?
Well, certainly the First Lady has done a lot to bring this issue to the front. And, you know, we're very grateful for all of her activities and also the stressing the physical fitness. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, so important to youth and the community gardens and just eating healthier. It's just critical.
I want to go back to the phones. We have so many calls here. I'm trying to judge which one will be most relevant at this time. So let's take Justin's call from St. Louis. Justin, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was actually just calling to speak directly to the food pantry experience. I am in that working poor category. My wife and I make too much money to be poor, according to the state of Missouri, and we don't make enough money to survive. I started going to a food pantry. My wife was horrified at the idea and would never be caught dead going there. We're very active at our church. It's horribly embarrassing for her. I myself don't have a problem with it, but when we go, we get a week's supply of food once a month. Hmm. And, you know, that's great. But what do you do the other 3 weeks?
Right. Right.
Yes.
Lisa, you look like you want to respond to that.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, when my students get their food bags on Fridays, and it's supposed to be enough to feed them for the weekend. But at the same time, sometimes I look through it and go, wow, this would just feed us for one meal. So I understand your pain. I really do.
It's a real eye-opener. We had a program a couple of weeks ago in which some folks subsisted on food stamps for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And what a jolt that was to all of them with regard
exactly.
to how quickly they ran out of things to eat. Is an adjustment made, Lisa, in the backpacks with regard to the size of the family? I mean, if a child has five siblings, seven siblings, is they get more or less, or is it all the same?
All the food bags have the same food. So, you know, one student isn't going to get something different than another student. And it all depends on what Sonny gets donated to the organization. I know there's usually a shelvable milk most of the time, but I think recently we haven't had shelvable milk a couple of times. A couple of years ago, we always had peanut butter almost every week, and that was wonderful, but we haven't had peanut butter in two years. So it depends on what they get, but if there's five students in a family, they get five food bags and they're all the same.
Well, you raise another issue here, and that is the question of, and it came up off the air, food allergies. You mentioned peanut butter. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of kids and adults who are allergic to peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of liability issues? Sonny, maybe you want to take this.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, Lisa, you don't get peanut butter anymore.
I know.
You know, there were so many children reporting a food allergy, you know, to peanut butter, and so many children have really violent reactions.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we just backed off the peanut butter for the most part. Mm-hmm. And also, most of the food that is in the bags is purchased. Mm-hmm. This program has a budget of about $450,000. We don't get that kind of food donated on a regular basis, and we want to make sure that all the children get the same things.
Mm-hmm. But, Glenn, is there a liability question here? Suppose, Captain Crunch had peanuts in it or nuts in it or something, and a kid ate it.
The food pantries generally try to screen for things like that, but we are protected by the law as long as we're not knowingly giving out food which is dangerous. In other words, stuff that is fresh products, which are obviously spoiled, we're protected from liability. But we have to rely on the families to tell us what they can and can't have. And that becomes a big problem, though, and we get a lot of families with members who are diabetic or on low-salt, low-sugar diets, people with health allergies and so on, people who need gluten-free. That's really hard for most pantries to come up with a bag of food for them.
And Lisa, you have a form, you said earlier, with regard
to... The form that Operation Backpack gives us has a clause on there that says, you know, we are not responsible for any reactions to any of the
food.
Be,
it could be a deal breaker, I would think. Back to the phones. Greta in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to mention something about our Missouri Medicaid-type program. If I need Medicaid, I have to spend down $300 of my own money a month. But in May, when they discovered I was $10 over the limit allowable, I was given notice that as of May 1st, I would be paying $105 towards Medicare. But in lieu of that, they would give me $80 a month of food stamps, which, you know, paying out $105, that reduced my Social Security down to $900, and that would be $20 a week towards food. And I just couldn't understand how being $10 over their limit, what is allowable for a single person, and then constantly I have to send in receipts for everything I spend on doctor appointments, on a copay, and they monitor so much that you just say, is it worth it? But yes, when I'm paying out an extra amount to Medicare or to Medicare in order to get $80 worth of food stamps, and then in January when Social Security ups my monthly benefits by $12, they reduce my food stamps by $7. It just doesn't make sense.
Greta, thank you so much. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I have another point.
And then the same thing, going into a store, it's kind of embarrassing to swipe your food stamp card, and people look at you like you don't look like you need food stamps. But I do like to eat as well, and it's not luxury items. But that's what I find discouraging. But I, same time, I'm grateful for $80 a month for food.
Sure, Greta. Thanks so much for the call. That brings to mind the issue before with regard to, you know, you can go over the limit and lose some of those benefits.
People have the mysterious idea that if you're poor, the government throws things at you. As we heard here, she's not alone. We see families all the time who struggle to comply with the rules, and the rules are very complicated. Sometimes they're contradictory, and she's dealing with state government, federal government. It's almost a full-time job being poor in this country.
Yeah. What is the role? Sunny, let me throw this your way. What should the role of government be here?
Well, I think that we need to provide more support to people living in poverty. And we just hear over and over and again, people get caught in this bind. You know, they're trying to do the best they can, and yet when they raise up to a certain level, they're penalized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly the $3 a day for food stamps, you know, just isn't enough for most people to get by, and especially if you're trying to eat nutritiously. But I think, again, going back to the movie, A Place at the Table, you know, we're talking about the political will is necessary to implement the changes. One of the things that we've been doing the last few months is implementing an advocacy program called No Kid Hungry, the goal being to end childhood hunger by 2015. And so for the first time, we're trying to connect children's to government programs that exist, such as the after-school meal programs, the summer meal programs, and make sure that children get the benefit of those programs that already exist and connect organizations so that they can access some of these programs.
Glenn, this weekend, a number of our friends were at a conference in Washington, D.C., and one of the big concerns we have is in the new farm bill, to find more money for crop supports and crop insurance, they're talking about taking tens of billions of dollars out of food stamps. Ironically, the USDA, the biggest component of their budget is food stamps. But instead of being seen as something important to protect, it's now seen as a piggy bank when you need more money for other things. For example, during the fiscal cliff negotiations, they needed $100 million to stabilize the dairy price support system. They took that $100 million out of the money committed to the food stamp program for nutrition education.
There are a couple of programs I have here in my notes, the one the Child Nutrition Act, the other the Hunger-Free Kids Act. Mm-hmm. Are these effective? Do they work? Are they funded adequately?
I don't think they're funded adequately.
No, okay.
And sometimes people just don't know to take make access to them, make mm-hmm. them available to their organizations and themselves.
Again, once the bureaucracy gets involved, it can become complicated.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that we're trying to do is encourage some of the agencies that we work with in local churches to start summer meal mm-hmm. programs. And there's a lot of paperwork to be filled out. So we have someone on our staff who works with agencies trying to demystify the entire process.
Lisa, what do your kids do during the summer?
Last year, we had a summer program where families could come to school and pick up a food bag. Now, I'm not positive if it came from Operation Food Search, but I know that our food service coordinator had made arrangements mm-hmm. for, I mean, at least at my school. I don't know about the other schools in our school district.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones, as time will allow us to do so. Ryan in Wentzville, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yeah, I am a small-scale organic farmer, and I'll tell you from a producer's perspective, in growing produce, we don't receive any government subsidy for doing that. And, you know, you're not going to find anybody that's growing produce that's making a killing doing it in our area. I have a very hard time finding somebody doing that. And so what we have to do on a regular basis is try to get the highest return on our product just so that we can make a living doing that. And we struggle with that every day. And so what happens is our healthy produce, fresh produce, becomes out of reach for poor families. And, you know, I'm now marketing my produce to only affluent families that can afford it. And, you know, we struggle with that. And I think that's something that, you know, that's a big lack in the farm bill that we really need to look at.
Yeah, I think we all agree. We would love to see people like this being subsidized mm-hmm. as opposed to some of these large corporate farmers.
We have an email from Juanita in the city who says that she lives very far from a supermarket. No public transportation would take her there. And she likes the idea of a garden, but she says, true, growing gardens can help, but what about those who cannot garden? What recourse do they have? Is the food bank the only alternative?
You know, sometimes that's the only alternative in some of these food deserts, unfortunately. And, you know, we can't always predict the food that is going to be donated. We can't always ensure that it's going to be a balanced food items. And it's just a problem that really needs legislation, and it needs money behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if we individuals had a problem, you know, if we have it, we'll throw money at it. Well, this is a problem, and we need to start throwing more money at it.
Well, the government, it seems to me, is throwing money at problems, but it's at the wrong place and the wrong problems.
It's going to the wrong places.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, very limited time left, but Son, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about some of the things that you're involved with to help alleviate this problem.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to share is that a continuing dialogue on hunger and food deserts, the Spirit of St. Louis Women's Club is going to be sponsoring a program on Saturday, March 9th at the Botanical Gardens Monsanto Center, and interested people can register on their website. And we also have a very fun event coming up tomorrow and Saturday called the Downtown Iditarod. And it plays off the Alaskan Iditarod, only the sleds are replaced with grocery carts, and it's a fundraiser for Operation Food Search, and it's a lot of activity, a lot of fun, and a good way to raise the awareness of the problem of hunger in our community.
All right. And once again, to repeat, A Place at the Table, the film we've been talking about, will be shown from March 1st through 7th at various times of the Tivoli Theater. We have more information about that on our website at stlpublicradio.org. A final thought in 10 seconds, Glenn Keenan?
Just that hunger is all around us. One person in six in the state of Missouri. Probably one of the next 10 people you walk past on the street is going to be getting help from a food pantry.
You've got 5 seconds, Lisa. You want to say a final word?
I'm good.
Okay, we'll keep up the good work, all of you. Nice to see you, and thanks so much for being with us. And we'll ask you to join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, when he'll talk about Hirtana Productions' concert featuring the Al Andalus Ensemble and with jazz vocalist Kurt Elling. Also, Aaron Williams will take a look at UMSL's African Documentary Film Festival. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll get an early look at the Regional Arts Commission's survey on working artists in the St. Louis area. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr. Spencer Reed and Drew Becker also participate. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.